Hello, everybody. Welcome to Crew Chat, your weekly podcast for everything disability. Today, I have with me Jonathan Cha, Ibi D.
Hello.
And Andrew Burton.
G'day.
How are we today?
Yeah, we're very good, thank you, David. How's Jonathan and Andrew?
How are you going?
What are we going to be talking about today?
Talking to all of you. How are you, Andrew?
Oh, I'm good. I'm in a bit of a flare, but I'll manage. A bit tired, but yeah.
Yeah, no, all good, all good.
Well, last week we spoke about
David. Yeah. Sorry about that. Look, just to recap. Last week, we spoke about Australian disability enterprises and the idea of modern slavery and how it's affected us all, or, you know, people with disability. So this week, we're going to be continuing on with that. So for those that are watching or tuning in, if you have any comments you want to provide, any thoughts into modern slavery and how it's had an impact on you, let us know in the comments. Let us know. Welcome, gentlemen. Everyone's had a good week. It's been a long week. Anyway, back to the podcast. In regard to the Australian Disability Enterprises, how exactly has it impacted on your daily living? David, been involved in the sector? How has it impacted on your daily living?
For example, what do you mean?
Working, you know, going to work, working long hours, just getting paid that minimum amount.
The problem with that is you want to go to work, you want to get paid, but because they're going to give you minimum, you don't want to do the extra hours.
Of course. You don't feel want to contribute more.
Because you're getting less, and you're doing the same job as someone that's got no disability, or you're doing it better because we do it through passion.
Oh yeah, it's to be more productive. That's a change. What are your thoughts on that, Andrew?
Well, a lot of these ADEs have no idea what to do with me because. Most of my disability is centered around fatigue and brain fog. So if I do work, I do need to lay down quite a lot or take periods where I need to sleep or lay down. Yep. A lot of workplaces don't have the space for that or equipped for that, nor are they really good at like pacing activity to fit my kind of spoons, as they say in the chronic illness community. So you tend to get parked, you don't get offered jobs, or if you do get offered jobs, like I was talking about last week, I was offered the same job that I was doing previously before I got ME, less than 10 bucks an hour. And you watch able-bodied people doing the same work that you used to do, getting paid a living wage, you just feel you're a slave because you're getting paid 10 bucks an hour for the same work and all because you've got the disability label attached to you.
Yeah. For me, when I first entered the workplace, I remember going through the disability employment, agencies. Look, they threw me in a John-style kind of a job where, serve food and that. Now, I have a physical condition, so I use a physical wheelchair. I wasn't a waiter per se. I was, my role to do the accounting work. I was there to do the accounting work. When I signed the contract, I believe back then the minimum wage, $12.50 an hour, according to, the Shad's award and that. The boss here just signed me off right away, told me, "Radio, you're getting paid $12.50 an hour, so minimum wage." I agree, because I was new to the workplace. I got into my job. Well, not necessarily. No, I get one single experience in the accounting field. Dealing with that letters all day. You know how to use a MacBook. Now, I worked for 32 hours. Still haven't got paid yet. Decided to follow up. Enough was enough. The boss wasn't communicating with me. There was a crack in the system. Mind you, this was 8 years ago. 9 years ago now. Still chasing my wages. So, yeah, it's been nine long years. I don't think I'll ever see that money in my life.
How did you find that job?
Look, I wasn't necessarily given the job I was set to do. To be frank with you, they promised me, you know, they're going to get the systems in place. They're going to get everything prepared. It never fell through. I waited a month for them to, you know, get the system installed. And so, yeah, I left. And mind you, it wasn't accessible to get into, you know, the restaurant. So it was three large steps to get into the restaurant.
Okay, so it wasn't accessible.
They provided me with a portable ramp. But the portable ramp was like, cause it was so old, like, it was about to, you know, break. I could have just them for, you know, and to the ground.
Was the toilet accessible?
And this is what I don't get. There is an accessible toilet in the restaurant, but getting inside the restaurant is not accessible. It made no sense whatsoever.
That wouldn't make sense.
No, it wouldn't. But I left. I worked 32 hours. Hey, miscommunication. I went searching for another job. But what I'm saying, what I'm trying to get at is, it's hard for people with disability to, you know, find a job. And when they do, they get some ridiculous, you know, job. Just so, you know, the government can give them a pat on the back and give them, you know, some kind of small way, like pocket money, per se. And if people want to be independent, you know, growing up, they won't be able to do it just saving, $3 a day. It's completely ridiculous. There is a crack in the system.
So, our next question is, how is it fair to be paid below the minimum wage rate because of your disability?
What are your thoughts, Andrew?
It's not fair at all, really. Because you look at able-bodied people that are like other payments, like JobSeeker or the age pension, for example. Yeah. They can earn up to a certain amount before they meet their threshold to be cut off the pension. I don't think any disabled person working on with these ADEs ever meet the threshold because the pay is so low. But also, like, just from a human rights point of view, and because, you know, I've got both born and acquired disabilities, but like with the acquired disability, just like the change from that of being able to have a disposable wage and being able to spend that on whatever I want without the government tracking me or whatever from when I was working full-time before ME compared to being on the DSP and not having access to a disposable income, your quality of life just drops when you don't have a disposable income. And so when we talk about disabled people being self-determined, and like we just had Disability Pride last month, right? Look at the other pride movements like LGBTQIA and Black Pride and all of that. They're able to build the resources to promote their pride events because they have a population that can be self-determined and earn money to do so. Mm-hmm. But with disability pride, we can't, because the government puts us in these situations where we're second-class citizens, where we can't even be self-determined. We can't even earn the money to build that self-determination. Yeah.
You could say we're limited. We're limited.
More like third class. Go on, go on. Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. What are your thoughts on that, David? Is it fair?
Well, I don't think it's fair, but it seems like they're trying to say, oh, let's keep them busy. We'll give them a pension and let's just keep them busy.
No, yeah. Fair enough. Look, we got a comment here. Hello from Western Australia. I'm on the DSP, but not in the IS yet. I watched the previous episode. I've never been in ADE. But I reckon I'd rather volunteer than be paid less than the award wage. Yeah, look.
Exactly. Yeah,
David.
What they said there, I'd rather volunteer than be paid less than the minimum wage. Because then that way you know you're given it out of your free will.
But I don't think people should, think that way. I mean, look, it's good to volunteer every now and then. I volunteer in many, organizations. But if you're going to be paid to do work, you need to be paid just like everybody else.
If the quality of work is like everyone else, you should be getting paid as much as others.
I relate really well to that last comment because that's exactly what I did. The ADEs didn't really know what to do with me, and then I still wanted a purpose and I still wanted to do something with my life, even though I spend most of it housebound. But I still want to, be giving or contributing to the community some way. And even though I couldn't get work, I just ended up volunteering and doing all the modern slavery and advocacy for people with my condition, that kind of thing. So I totally get it. And that's exactly what I did. I rather volunteer and at least I can see the change and the benefit that way than being treated like a third class citizen in modern slavery. I mean, respect and disrespect.
And
I'm going to choose respect by building my own.
Exactly. And Andrew, you can also put that into your resume too.
Yeah, awesome. Awesome.
The third point is how do we engage the ADE management to raise our concerns with coping inside the subservient workplace environment?
Thank you for asking the question, Jonathan. But we just we just have a comment from I think, sorry, BE. Sorry about that. Yeah, that's what I mean. If I work, I'd want to be paid the same as anyone else. Good stuff, good stuff. So, yeah, look, David, what are your thoughts? How do we engage the ADE management to raise our concerns with coping in such a subservient workplace environment? I guess it's for us, it's, you know, you just, like we mentioned last week, using our voice. You know, getting that confidence, you know, use our voice. You know, getting ourselves out there.
My thoughts are probably a bit more radical, a bit more union-based. But I think at the moment it's kind of pointless talking with management because it's just so corrupt. Mm. They get the money from our labor. They also get money from the government. So there's no really incentive for them to change anything at the moment. Taking a union-based approach, I think the best thing we can do is strike. And like you said, Ibi, is use our voice and make a voice and make it heard and show what the conditions are in these places, like bringing it out on media such as these podcasts or on TV or in the Senate. I think Senator Jordan Steele John was talking about some of these ADE environments. I think that's the only way we can change, because currently talking to ADE management's just falling on deaf ears because we're just a money-making machine for them, basically. And if we strike and they can't get their money, then perhaps something might change. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think yeah. if you find a job but you go through sort of management and then talk to them and have a discussion with them and do it the human way. If they'll pay us the proper way, maybe they'll pay us the proper wage.
I think by refusing to work for slave wages, we've got to remember we can negotiate enterprise agreements as well, but we don't really have a voice or an advocate to help us do that. But if an ADE offers us a job where we're only getting paid $4 an hour, we have the right to say, no, I'm not taking that job.
And obviously, we've got the right to say no.
They have to lift the wages, right, for someone to take the work on. But then you get into the problem of people on work for the dole, the job seekers being forced into those positions as well. So, yeah. It's complicated.
Yeah. No. So, what does our future look like in our workplace setting, you know, as Australian Disability Enterprise? And exactly how best can we contribute to this future? So, look, things need to change. And I stressed that out last week. We need to recognize people, you know, for their work and for their, I guess, what do you call it? For their knowledge, the knowledge that they have, you know? And not just, I guess,
and also taking the contribution,
using them for their advantage. So go ahead, David.
And for their contribution, a lot of businesses that are managed by people with disability, I think can be also be paid like normal people. So if you can start up a business that's managed by disability, won't everyone else be paid the same? Because the manager is disabled, got a disability, and the rest will have a disability.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think more representation in these companies of disabled people, especially in elevated positions, needs to happen, because I mean the big thing in our community is nothing about us without us. But I'm not sure if I could name many. Well, I think Dylan Alcott has a ADE now, doesn't he? But that's probably the only bloke I can think off the top of my head that's disabled that runs the ADE. I think most of them run by able-bodied people or able-bodied managers.
Well, Vision Australia, I think, has a disabled person.
Oh, are they an Australian Disability Enterprise? Okay. Or are they just a charity?
They're not charities, I'm not sure. Vision Australia, I'm not sure if it's a charity, but it's still...
If anyone in the knows what David's on about, please provide in the comment. Look, it's good that, you know, Dylan Alcott has his own ADE, and because he has that experience and he has that knowledge of like what the needs are for people, you know, disability. And hopefully, yeah, he won't, you know, pay people. Well, the organization won't pay, you know, $2 an hour, but to actually recognize that person for, you know, who they are, rather than just some money-making object.
I think we also need to move away from, well, with the supported wage system, it's all based on comparative. Like, so what the disabled person is comparative to an able-bodied worker, whereas it should be met by, well, how productive are they in the workplace? But also, you know, we should be moving away from that system and be going to an hourly rate of, well, this is the minimum wage per hour. If you're going to tell disabled people they need to meet to a KPI, which is a key performance indicator, it's going to cause things like further disability or injury or neglect, because they're going to feel like, oh, we have to work up to this able-bodied rate to get a minimum wage, rather than working within their capacity or the workplace modernizing to fit a disabled or injured person's capacity. They do it with WorkCover already. If an able-bodied person is injured on the job, they modify the job for them to be able to come back to work. There's no reason they can't do it for disabled people.
Exactly. They should have that fair assessment rather than comparative analysis.
But would it be fair if someone is packing something and they get paid for the amount they pack?
Yeah, but again, the problem is comparative to an able-bodied person packing for a disabled-bodied person, there's going to be a disparity there, yeah? So, and this is what I was talking about on the piece rate when I cross-examined the piece rate. I said, well, piece rate's based on your average competent picker. And then I asked the person, well, who is your average competent picker? Is it a male able-bodied person? Or are you splitting between the genders? Are you splitting between ability and disability? How do you adjust for a disabled person earning minimum wage on the piece rate if your average competent picker is an able-bodied white person, you know? So when they do that, it creates a loophole to create these kind of modern slavery-like wages, which is why we introduced a floor rate onto the piece rate on the horticultural award. They could easily do the same thing with the supported wage system. Have a floor rate for the disabled person if it's based on production. So from the start, they get minimum wage. If they manage to boost their production, cool, they get a bonus. If they want to do it that way, it could work. But if they do it the way that they're doing everywhere they've had this kind of piece rate or rate based on production is where we see these modern slavery-like wages and loopholes for employers to legally underpay their workers.
I agree with you. They should at least put minimal wage, and and incentives if they do perform better.
Yeah, but again, even with that, like, able-bodied people are always going to get the bonus because they can perform better. So that's why I don't like these performance-based rates, because it's they're inherently ableist, because it's set up in a way where either women, people with disabilities, injured people won't be able to meet that parity rate or get the bonus. So I think keeping to an hourly minimum wage is the best, and then bonuses like they do in normal businesses. But it's a hard one to navigate.
Good point. But it's something to think about anyway.
Yeah.
Something to take away. On that note, any final thoughts before we wrap up?
Jonathan, we haven't heard much from you.
My final is I dream of a future where judged by our capabilities based on our situation, not held up to an unrealistic archetype of what a quote-unquote able-bodied person produces, because that would only entrench inequality.
Yes.
That's a great point. I'd like to follow on from that too, because this is what we're trying to change with our society, is we're trying to remove the barriers that increase inequality, like Jonathan was saying. So if we and this is why under this kind of capitalistic system, I hate to sound like an extreme leftist, but they don't want to modernize, or the workplaces have kind of been like the last place, along with housing and some of the other things that they want to increase access to. And if we remove barriers and increase access, it benefits everybody, because we all get old, we all get injured, and we want to make sure everyone gets paid equally and treated fairly and have access to buildings, workplaces, relationships, community, that kind of thing. The workplaces that are saying, oh, this is too expensive, we can't do it, blah, 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 they're putting a cost value on us and basically saying we're not worth it, which is what breeds this type of discrimination. And that's what we've got to fight and get rid of.
Yep, fair point. That's a very good point you raised. David, over to you. What are your final thoughts?
In my final thoughts, I believe that everyone should be getting paid according to their knowledge and their capabilities. Now, and we should all get minimum, at least, well, not like a minimum for a normal rate, not for a disability.
Yep.
It's a good point, David. We're all normal. It's just that the
able-bodied.
Yeah, building on what everyone said. David,
get rid of the two-wage system. We can't have a system where one group of people is getting paid less than another group of people. It's not. Yeah, it's not right.
A lot of the times they say we don't want to affect your pension, but let it affect our pension.
Yeah, let us make that decision.
But it's still gonna exactly. Yeah, affect our pension.
Yeah, look, no, the government,
the money.
The government needs to focus on capabilities rather than disabilities.
But also, an able-bodied person, if they're on job seeker, they can choose to work up to the threshold and say, "Okay, look, I'll do 4 or 5 days a week before my job seeker gets cut off or whatever." Disabled people should have the same option. Okay, look, I can work 8 hours a week due to my capability, or I can work 16 hours a week before my pension gets cut off. Let them make that choice. Don't let the business make the choice and say, oh, well, we don't want to affect your pension, so we're going to underpay you.
And there's no justification.
We're going to make you work more and give you
exactly.
It's fine on. Awesome conversation. Yes, I did.
Self-determination. Let us have the choice. Nothing about us without us.
Without us, exactly.
It's the other way at the moment. That's the problem.
Exactly. Thank you for that. Something to take away.
Oh, what was that, Jonathan?
Thank you, guys. And I look at tune in next week. We'll be talking more about, you know, the Australian Disability Enterprise and how it's affecting us people with disability.